So hi guys, how's everybody doing? We are here back with another exciting episode of the Black Tower Podcast, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am one of your hosts, the man from the Kazakhstan, Borat, your... I can't think of an old tongue, wait. Your Kazakhstan Mihail.
Jesus Christ.
No, I am Daniel, your Amin Khan Mihail. I will stop using that accent because it is fun, but it is not appropriate for the time.
It's meant in jest, and the world
knows that.
Whether they choose to accept it and acknowledge it is a completely different story.
Fair enough.
But anyway,
who are you, my bearded friend?
Well, let's see. Let me look at one of my many lives. For those of you only listening, I'm wearing the flicker and flicker and flicker and flicker and flicker shirt. That's his joke.
He's checking a flicker. He is checking one.
It actually looks like I'm checking my tits. Anyway.
It does a little bit, but you know.
Yeah. I am Andrew. You're Bajan Mihail. You're Mihail of bad choices, but good drinks. Because you guys send them to us.
That is true. We did have it. Some very good drinks.
I love it. So, on that note, speaking of drinks from the Gathering Madness, those of you that won our categories from the Gathering Madness, we are working on the prizes for that. We have to get them custom made. And with the Twitter of Chaos going full tilt into chaos and dropping stuff every day, and my apparent recent fondness for making videos, been kind of busy. I literally spent all day Sunday editing. That was my entire day Sunday. Like the spoiler warning rotating text you see in the trailer breakdown stuff. Like I made that. I mean, Now the text I made out of a logo maker website, so I didn't really do that much, but I animated it and stuff, which is actually easier than I thought in DaVinci Resolve.
I believe you.
Yeah, Morshadi, our unofficial but still official fact checker, Mihail, joined me. Mm-hmm. And we talked for almost 2.5 hours, 3 hours, a long fucking time about the trailer.
Christ. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun to edit. Crisis thing, avert it because it's not until later. But we're going to get through all of this. It might be a little bit of a faster paced episode, which those of you that are like, you guys talk forever, might be fine with, but may not be. Sorry, I'm having to send messages because we agreed to do a thing today and it's at 9. So we have 45 minutes to talk about the thing we're going to talk about. But before we talk about the thing we're going to talk about, make sure you go and check out www.blacktowerpod.com, where you can find all of the stuff you might ever want to or might never want to know about the Black Tower podcast, including our measurements and the P.O. box where you cannot send us gifts because we don't have a P.O. box.
Not yet.
Yeah. Are we going to put it like equidistant from the three of us? Like who gets to drive 6 hours this weekend to check the PO box?
I would imagine that we would just designate a person whose job that was to go check the PO box. And then we would just do that.
Fair enough. So go and check out Black Tower Pod. And if you want to get yourself one of these dope flicker and flicker and flicker and flicker and flicker and flicker shirts, head on over to New Creations by Jen. Links to both of our merch shops on blacktowerpod.com. Center screen. Just scroll down and you'll see it. You can't miss it. And if you miss it, you're a dark friend. So also go and check out...
And if you don't believe that, you're a dark friend.
Yeah. Also go and check out thegreatblight.com. It's a fantastic resource for spoiler-friendly wiki articles about the Wheel of Time, as well as finding other Wheel of Time-oriented content creators, YouTubers, podcasters, artists, musicians, all kinds of that great stuff is there. And last but certainly not least, go and check out our official sponsor, Josh's Better Half. It was why he's, well, I'm not going to blame her for why he's not here tonight, because they're doing a family thing.
Yes. But
part of the reason, at least 50% of the reason.
Yeah.
At least 50% of the equation as to why he's not with us tonight. And has been kidnapped by a rockin' or toe rockin', whichever you want to look at it as, which is a spoiler.
probably large enough to be a tow rocket.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Whatever. But go check out the Crystal Barista. You can find the chibi image of her that you can click to go to her website down at the bottom of our website. That being said, we are going to play a relatively quick spoiler warning from some voices that anybody that's ever listened to the audiobooks would recognize, and we're going to get straight into the episode.
This episode contains spoilers from the entire Wheel of Time series.
If you have not read the series, you are at risk of being spoiled.
You have been warned.
There you go.
You have been warned. Sorry.
What does this even mean?
My bad.
Yeah, you're good. So, Daniel, yes. What are we talking about? Or should I say, who are we talking about this episode?
So, as anyone who scrolled up far enough into the live discussion knows, or the live recording discussion knows, if you are a Patreon, which if you're listening as I'm saying this on Discord, then you are. But if you're listening to this later, you will know that today's topic is another one of our wonderful and some of my favorite of our series is that we do. We are talking about a character today, and then another character later, and then their relationship even later than that. And we realized, thanks to actually some eagle-eyed fans in some ways, that we still hadn't done that on one of the Tavirin from the Emmonsfield Five.
Yeah.
So we are making that up. We are definitely, we did not do that intentionally, and we will be remedying that particular issue. By today, we are talking about one of the more beloved characters. As I said, he is an Emmonsfield Five member, the Wolf Brother, the Blacksmith, the ever burly, long thinking, quiet, I'm not a bloody lord, Perrin Golden Eyes Ibarra.
The Rutherford to our Marcus.
Yes.
You don't know, in the TV show, Perrin Ibarra is going to be played, or is being played, and kind of has been played, as production has been marked officially on IMDb Pro as complete for season one. Maybe, I think it's season one. I think it's when the alert finally came out today. I saw Watt Series tweeted about it. I didn't look to see if it was season one or season two. I'd imagine season one. But Marcus Rutherford, Perrin Ibarra, looks fantastic, and we can't wait to see those golden eyes that I think, and many of us think, they have been hiding from us in the trailer and teasers. But
probably
Perrin Ibarra.
Perrin Ibarra.
Motherfucking Perrin Ibarra. Because I borrow those golden eyes.
Hey.
No, that's more of like a Uchiha thing than an Ibarra thing.
Ooh, something just take. Ibarra.
So we meet Perrin shortly after we meet Rand and Matt in Eye of the World in Amon's field, where we get the exposition that he has grown up with Matt and Rand, and the three boys are quite tight compatriots. Perrin is the more kind of calm, chilled, rational, logical group of friends, where Rand acts on his heart and kind of his emotional drive, and Matt just does whatever the fuck he wants, apparently enabled by maybe parents that don't really reprimand him as well as, you know, the Luhans have at the Forge, and Perrin's family.
You come and accuse my son of setting a badger out on the green with no proof? You come to me today on the day of winter night and you tell me that my son has captured a badger in a bag?
Yeah. I'm still, it is 100% headcanon to me that Abel Coppin is the godfather of Evansfield.
I love it.
He doesn't have time to discipline his son because he is too busy making sure that that everything runs smoothly here in Emmonsfield and they don't turn into that Terran Ferry shit up the road.
Yeah. So Perrin is the eldest of four children born to Khan and Jocelyn Ibarra in 978 INI within a week of Rand Al-Thor. He has had two sisters, Adora and Dazelle, and a brother, Patrum.
Ouch.
Family were were farmers and lived in a sprawling family farm. It was more than half a day beyond Amon's field in the books. In the show, looks like he's also got a waifu. But we'll see more on that.
We don't know that.
We see him wearing like a ring on what in the U.S. is traditionally a wedding ring. But that is the speculation. And since the show is coming out, we might as well include it in part of our talking as much as we can for now.
No, let's wait to confirm that in the show before we actually mention it on this one.
All right, fine, fair enough. I will avoid any more TV stuff from it. At the age of 12, he becomes an apprentice to Harl Luan in Amon's field, who is the village blacksmith and has some notable skill and achievement there. And is probably, I would guess, because fantasy, 95% of what has led to his muscular build in comparison to the two other boys. Yeah.
Yep.
Fast forward. So we'll go ahead and talk about
the family. I like that comment.
Yeah.
He made the ring for his friend Rand. He didn't actually end up needing it though.
Oof.
Yeah, you're right. Ouch. You know why? He actually ended up needing three of them. Oh! Yeah.
Talk about getting knocked down and getting back up again.
Hey!
No, Amaryllis. Ain't nobody ever going to
keep me down.
Yeah, we'll just go in the order of the books. So, Perrin leaves with the rest of the group. He gets separated along with Egwene after the events of Shadar Logoth. And that's whenever he and Egwene meet up with Elias, who is a wolf brother. At this point, we don't yet know that Perrin is as well. But it's after this meeting that we start seeing signs of it. They meet up with the Tinkers. We get to see Aram, who I'm very happy to see what position he is in the trailer. Very happy to see his positioning in the trailer. Very happy. Not because of the actor, because of the character.
Yes.
Shortly after leaving the Tinker camp or the traveling people camp or whatever you want to call them, Perrin and Egwene are kind of cornered by some white cloaks. And Hopper shows up to try to defend them. The White Cloaks kill Hopper. And this is whenever it seems like Perrin's wolf brother nature fully activates. He goes full feral, blacks out and kills, or reds out because he sees blood. And kills two of the White Cloaks before being knocked out and apprehended along with Egwene. And thus begins a bit of a two-time trope of Perrin in captivity. This time he's actually the captive, so it's a little entertaining. Ultimately, as happens in all fantasy, the two are rescued by the rest of their compatriots that happen across the White Cloak camp and figure out that they're there. And they move on.
Or
they know he's there because he still has the coin.
Yeah. Well, technically, at that point, fucking Joffrey Bornhold has his coin.
Okay, that's a fair point.
It's still in the camp, and that's what matters. Because they come across the camp because Moraine goes, I know one of them boys is in there, right down there.
I seen it with my eye, Sadai eye.
I saw it with my good eye.
I saw it with my Kassira.
I saw it with this one. The eye Sadai. This gem I wear on my head. So as you stated, if I remember correctly, it is everybody working very well in tandem, Moraine, Lan, and Nynaeve. That actually gets them out of there. And it's funny because, of course, they show up and Moraine and Lan, who are far more worldly in some ways, are like, there's a reason Perrin and Egwene are down there in that camp. Now, it's probably a bullshit reason because White Cloaks, but there's a reason that they're down there in that camp. And Nynaeve's like, oh, heavens no. The White Cloaks would never take somebody innocent into their ranks and capture them and make them prisoners. The White Cloaks is supposed to be good people, and Perrin would never do anything wrong.
Just see Lan and Moraine looking at her being like, right. Well, if you knew about you what we know about you, you would feel very fucking differently.
Right. Well,
or what we even knew about the White Cloaks.
Yeah, well, then they go down into the White Cloak encampment. They free Egwene and Perrin, and they're like, and then Nynaeve's like, so what did you do to get the White Cloaks so flustered? And then Perrin's like, oh, I murdered two of them. And she's like, oh, my heavens, you did what?
My boy, I used to thump him in the head with a stick, and now he's got blood on his hands. Egwene, I can't believe you. Sorry, I was still thinking of Aurum.
Right. I was trying to decide between Aurum and Rend, and I just don't know.
Ooh, pretty colors.
They're all so attractive. I just
have you ever seen a man with a seven-colored behind?
And now for something completely different. A man with a seven-colored behind. But yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have seen the Amerlin stole. Now welcome to the Amerlin stool.
Oh, no. It's anyway, a seven-colored stool sample.
Anyway, I think we can fast forward to the village of Remen in Altara, mm-hmm. where we meet the fake Mandarb.
Correct.
Much like the LSU Tigers are the fake Tigers, we meet the fake Mandarb, who is actually...
That horse's name is Mandarb.
Yeah. Who's actually Zareen Bashir, but is going by her hunter of the horn name, Mandarb. Perrin laughs, points out that Lan's horse is named Mandarb.
She goes, fine, Zareen I'll go goes by like, Fael.
This is bullshit. I'm Fael. I'm a falcon. And did Perrin already, had he already had the conversation with Min at this point about the vision? And he's like, he goes from ha 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 to,
and there's a falcon on one shoulder and a hawk on the other. And she goes, fine, I'm Falcon. And he goes, no, go back to Mandarb.
This isn't
go
funny.
Go back to Mandarb.
It's like, no. It's like, she's like, well, that's fine. Call me Fael. It means Falcon. And Perrin is just. which is pretty funny. So they get closer and closer over the journey, leaving Remen.
Remen.
Yeah, Remen, which again is in Altara. It is on the Lugard Road, which crosses the river Manethrindrel. They continue on for a while. We get the kind of the whole like issue between Perrin, Fael, and the unfortunate mediator Loial. Happens they go back to Two Rivers, I believe, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because this
is actually before all this, there is a couple of important things we should mention. Perrin is very
barely.
We don't need to really talk about that one. no, I was talking about
that's what Perrin thinks, and he smells rage.
Yes, well,
what smells like ozone? This. Oh, it's my girlfriend. How have I fucked up again, madam?
Fuck. No, Perrin actually does a couple of intense things before they go to the Two Rivers. Because, for starters, he actually has been learning a little bit about Teleranriad, which he knows as the Wolf Dream. And he's being talked about it by Hopper, who keeps on being like, get out of here, motherfucker. Like, you don't belong here. You're here too strongly. Get out. But he's like, no, I have shit to do here. For example, he does actually save Fael's life in a trap that was meant presumably for Moraine from a little hedgehog Terangreal, or maybe just a hedgehog that has been magicked. It's hard to tell exactly what it is. But it seems like perhaps someone in the Black Aja, which does exist, motherfuckers, might have been trying to get Moraine out of the picture. And they end up going ahead and getting Fael instead. And Perrin, both out of a fondness for Fael, but more at that point out of a strong sense of duty, goes, I'm going to go in there and save her. And so he goes in and he touches the hedgehog and he also gets trapped in Teleranriad. But with his knowledge of the Wolf Dream, which we know as Teleranriad, he gets them out, which is pretty cool, and starts
definitely a pattern of him knowing way too fucking much about Teller and Riad at every single time he enters the wolf dream. And then the other thing
you are here too strongly, young bull.
Right?
You are not ready.
You are not ready.
Well, fucker, I watched you die. You haven't been here that long. And it's like, oh, wait, they've probably had a whole life of experience here.
Yes. And then the other thing that I would say that's
is that why they communicate with images and scents? Because you image, you like imagine where you want to be in the wolf dream and Teleron Riad, and that's where you go. So, like, literally, their entire livelihood has taught them how to traverse Teleron Riad. Is that like an obvious connection that I'm just now making?
Yes and no. I mean, it's not unobvious, but it's definitely not something that clicks immediately.
Just had that thought.
No, it's a good one. I
need to get the Jimmy Neutron brain blast button set up now.
Gotta blast. But yeah, the other thing that Perrin does between sort of the last thing that we talked about and now is that on their way down to the Stone of Tyr, they go through a village.
We're gonna rock down to Kalindor Avenue and kill all the High Lords. That's all I got.
No, it's I'm just dancing like I Rickrolled people, but it didn't happen. No, but the other thing that happens, it's actually very important for later on in Perrin's life, career, whatever you want to call it, is that they end up meeting some... Rand pieces the fuck out from a campment that they have...
He plays Runaway.
Yeah, he plays Runaway, and he goes down to go to Tyr, to the stone, because he's just like... getting all these fucking dreams and shit about Kalindor, and he's just like, I need to get down to Kalindor.
Well, and he's kind of studying the prophecies a little bit.
Yes.
And he's like, well, the faster I fulfill these, the faster this is over with, because he's kind of like, I'm ready to die, but he's also not, I'm ready to die.
Right? Well, he's like, if it's going to happen, I might as well make it happen now. And then, of course, later he realizes, like, maybe I should not do that, because... it'll be better for all of us if I actually do this smart instead of fast. But at this point, he's like... Yeah.
Well, it doesn't happen until book 13, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, at this point, he's very much like, I'm going to die, so I might as well make it tomorrow.
He doesn't watch Nemo. That's what he does on Dragon Ball. He watches Nemo and realizes that fish are friends, not food.
But yeah, so he pieces out. He goes to go get Kalindor out of the Stone of Tyr. Perrin goes, yeah, we should follow him. And Moraine goes, yeah, dipshit, we were always going to follow him. Get in line. And then they head on out. And in one of their stops, they discover a number of Hunters of the Horn that have captured. I mean, they have actually captured. Their story's bad, but they have actually captured. I shouldn't put that in
quotes. Oh, is this Gaul?
Yeah. They've captured an Aiel and put him in a tiny cage in the middle of town. And Perrin goes... Warrior
man in tiny cage.
Right? And Perrin goes, y'all are full of shit. I've seen Aiel. I don't believe you for a goddamn second. I'm going to go see what the Aiel has to say about this. And he goes outside and he starts talking to Gaul. And Gaul's like, you're good people, man. I like you. These other fuckers, they can go to hell. But you got something. And Perrin's like, I can see us becoming friends. And then they murder some white cloaks together after he lets them out of the cage, you know, to cement their friendship. Because anybody that you murder people with, that's a true friend. and then Gaul runs off to go and rejoin his... No, does he travel with them after that? No, he runs off and then comes back later. Yeah, no, that's exactly what happens. He goes off, and then they meet again in the Stone of Tyr, because that's where all the Aiel are going as well. So yeah, Perrin's like, go be free, my murderous brother. We're good. You're good people. have fun, be good, don't do anything I wouldn't do. And so then they meet back up in Tyr, and they become extremely fast friends. And Gaul is just like, cool, I owe you a life debt. I'm gonna stick by you always. And Perrin's like, cool, I like having an Aiel buddy. And this is where the like picking up strays thing comes, like starts, in my humble opinion. And it's what gives us Arum later. And I love it because it gives us Gaul, but I hate it because it gives us Arum. Anyway.
Fair point. I would have to agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't remember. Where were they going in the ways? Where they take, oh no, didn't they like get wind that Troll Troll and them moved to Two Rivers? And so they were using the ways to get back to Two Rivers?
Well,
or am I completely off base here?
Yes and no. Rand actually knows that there are that Padan Fain has gone to the Two Rivers because he was given a message that Rand needed to meet him at the fields on the Almuth Plain. And if he didn't meet him on Almuth Plain, then Padan Fain was going to go to the Two Rivers.
So this is after and they've so, already gone to Almuth Plain because well, so of the Mirror World fuckery. And so now he assumes, okay, Padan Fain has gone to the Two Rivers, so someone needs to go to the Two Rivers.
He can't go to the Two Rivers himself because he's too public, or at least I should say, he feels like he can't go to the Two Rivers because he is too much of a public figure at that point. And he decides that if he himself goes to the Two Rivers, it will bring too much attention.
It'll bring more enemies to his home.
Yes. And so he says, I can't go, but Perrin.
Oh, yeah, because they stage the whole fake argument where he tells Perrin to get the fuck out. Yeah.
Yep.
And Fael is like the only one that's like, that was masterfully done. Good job. And he's like, you fucking knew?
That was some really good acting, you bullshit person.
Yeah. And Perrin's like, for a second, like, did you know? I'm like, how did you know? And then he's like, wait, you always fucking know. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so Perrin and Fael go with Loial, Gaul, Bane, and Chiad to the Two Rivers through the ways. And when they arrive, as you stated, Fael and Perrin have this whole interplay where like Fael goes to find Loial first and makes him promise that he'll take her to the Two Rivers.
And this is like after another like argument because of Bear Lane, I believe, right?
I believe so.
Like, this is like they've had several already, and this is kind of like
this is the one the really big one brings it to a head. Ones. Yeah,
yeah.
And so she makes Loial promise that he'll take her to the Two Rivers, and then Perrin goes to Loial and says, "Hey, buddy, can you take me to the Two Rivers?" And Loial goes, "I am so sorry, Perrin. I have already made." Actually, what Loial says is, absolutely, Perrin, I will take you to the Two Rivers. And then Fael goes, hey, bitch, you told me you would take me to the Two Rivers first, so do that. And this guy can follow along like a fucking puppy dog the whole way. And then Perrin goes, fine, I will follow along like a
puppy dog. Because Perrin and Gaul have this whole dialogue like the entire way where they're both like, I don't understand women. And Gaul's like, nor do I, because Bane and Chiad... I really like Chiad, and I really don't like Bane.
Well, he doesn't say I really don't like Bane, but he's like, I really like Chiad, but I could take or leave Bane.
I would prefer Chiad without Bane, but...
But they're also first sisters, so you can't really do that.
Yeah. So yeah, all this culminates, and they arrive back at the Two Rivers, and I believe
it's... And we have this wonderful moment at that point, because unfortunately, when they arrive in the Two Rivers, Perrin finds out that while he has been gone, and since Padan Fain, a group of White Cloaks and presumably a group of Trollocs, though that one's a little bit questionable for a little while, have all made it to the Two Rivers before them. And I think I'm guessing because Dane Bornhald is there and he fucking hates Perrin. And yeah. because Padan Fain's there and he knows that Perrin is one of Rand's friends, they go to the Ibarra farm and they burn it to the ground and kill all of his family.
Yeah.
And so he gets to the Two Rivers and finds out that his whole family is fucking dead.
And Fael is like,
huh. Oh shit.
I suddenly have no reason to be angry with him.
Well, because she does. He needs me,
which is really
she
cool.
She still does, but she goes, yeah. pause. I'm going to be here for you right now because yeah. you need me.
Let me zoom this later.
Tomorrow, I'm going to really pick does. Up the fact that I'm mad at you.
Yeah. That's one. So there are instances where Fael does stuff, and we'll talk more about this when we do the next episode. Not the next recorded episode, but. Yes. It'll be released in December when we do Fael. But it's when there Fael. Are those moments where I actually yeah. really like Fael because I'm like,
oh yeah,
cool. So you know to put aside the fucking problem because Yabu thing just lost his whole family. Thank you for recognizing that's a little more important than you being mad about Barely.
And then as stated, we'll go into all of the other things that she does
yeah.
at a later date. But while they're there, Trollocs end up going ahead and attacking the Two Rivers a number of times, and Perrin...
He, like, mounts the defense several times.
Well, yeah.
And after a time or two of doing this, is whenever, like, whenever Amon's Field pretty much comes together and is like... Because initially, it's only Amon's Field.
Correct.
Like, Watch Hill, they're experiencing some Trolloc attacks and stuff, too, because... This is one of the instances where the shadow isn't being completely dumb.
Sure.
Because they're attacking other areas because it helps keep the white cloaks at bay. If they're only attacking one spot.
Questioning themselves, yeah.
Yeah. But after a time or two, or I think it's after the first time where he like leads the defense and they see like his ferocity in battle and his drive to like orchestrate and organize men, especially the now. Or by the end of the series, but apparently fucking always epically legendary Amon Fielder and Two Rivers in general archers with their crazy. Menetherin? Yeah.
Menetherinder, right?
They basically start treating and by the end, by the next attack are fully treating Perrin as Lord of the Two Rivers.
Well, and I absolutely love this moment, sort of. Because on one hand, you do have Perrin's Teveran nature that cannot be overlooked. It's absolutely something that plays a big part of this. And it's absolutely something where I don't think he would be in this position if he wasn't Teveran. But at the same time, to not give him credit and in so many ways, as much as I hate the way that she does it, Fael credit for making Perrin the Lord of the Two Rivers, if you will, would also be overlooking facts because his Teveran nature definitely gets people to follow him. That's just true. And it's true for all of the boys. And in my humble opinion, Nynaeve and Egwene as well. Whether you think they're actually Teveran in the book or not, I feel like everybody in the Emmonsfield Five has a natural proclivity, if not a strong nature that makes people follow them. Now, part of that is because all of them seem to lead by example, and Perrin does not just go, hey, you guys go and fight while I sit here in my cushy chair and, you know, do nothing. All of them go wade into the fight. All of them go wade into the problem, whether it's a battle, whether it's a meeting of the Aes Sedai Council, whether it's a, you know, a meeting of the kin, whether it's this, that, or the other thing. They all go into it going, hey, I think it's important to fight these Trollocs, so I'm going to do that. Who's with me? And lots of people go, I am. I definitely am, because fuck Trollocs. But at the same time, again, I will also say that Perrin does a pretty good job of of thinking. And I hesitate to say that because I dislike this particular trope, and I dislike the way that Perrin is always saying, like, oh, I'm so big and I could hurt people, so I deliberately think about everything that I do and I'm slow to action and things like that. And then you're like, bro, you like wade into battle like it's fucking nothing. You don't weigh your options at all when it comes to a lot of things. But again, it is also very much, you know, his hands-on leadership that gets people in the Two Rivers to follow him, which is bolstered very strongly by Zareen or Fael's upbringing as a noble and as royalty that gets her to maneuver him into the position of being Lord of the Two Rivers and having everybody listen to him, even though one of my favorite parts is the fact that he regularly is like, cool. So Tam just came up to me with a group of men and said, hey, Perrin, what should we do? And I said, I don't know, Tam, what should we do? And then he gave me an entire plan that was concocted entirely by himself and Abel Coffin. And then I went, cool, do that. And they were like, thank you, Lord Perrin. You're the best, Lord Perrin. We will do that, Lord Perrin.
Which
and
I'm Fael like, has to teach
you guys
him.
Came up with the fucking plan.
Yeah. Well, Fael has to teach him that because he's like, I'm tired of making all the decisions. They want me to make all the decisions. She's like, no, they don't know how to deal with a lord because they've never had one. They are just coming to you for you to say okay and approve their ideas. Basically. That's all you have to do is say okay. Unless it's a bad idea, then say, hey, how about we do B instead of A? And that's yep. it. Moving on from there.
Yeah, he ends up defending the Two Rivers really well. And again, we will talk more about what she does, but yeah. Fael is also instrumental in that. But at some point, they end up leaving the Two Rivers. With a bunch of Two Rivers men in tow.
After the epic cowardice of the White Cloaks. Because he swore that if they helped defend the Two Rivers against the massive Trolloc attack that was coming, mm-hmm. that he would willingly go with them for trial. And the White Cloaks... Yeah. Like, in the midst of, like, they cut down, like, a handful of Trollocs because they fucking ran away. And then yeah. they come back after the battle and they're like, all right, Perrin, dark friend, time to come with us. And he's like, ah, hey, better idea. Go fuck yourself. Perrin's resolution with the White Cloaks is one of my favorite parts about Perrin.
It's so good. Again, I don't dislike Perrin, but I definitely think that he's a trope that annoys me through, like, there are a lot of Perrins in books. And most of the time they annoy me. And the Wheel of Time is no different.
Because it's really hard to make a character who is
kind of annoying. But there are moments, including his dealing with fucking Dane Bornhold and Jarrett Fyar in that moment where I'm just like, yeah, Perrin, you fucking tell him.
Well, the thing about Perrin is like he's not indecisive, which is what often it seems like he is in the books. He's just very thoughtful. Now, there are a lot of times where his proclivity to try to think things through is operating counter to what he needs to do. And I think the Two Rivers is a lot of what helps him kind of like forcibly grow out of that. Because a lot of like all seven of our main characters from Amon's Field, they have things that happen that force them to grow up and change and adapt very quickly, some sooner than others. I think Egwene gets the most like jarring, like, hey, fucking shit's real different than you thought it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, because she starts as the most naive.
Yeah.
With, I think...
And she gets the worst rude awakening to the evils of the world.
Which I think Perrin is actually probably a close second. And then, of course, Rand, just the scope of what he has to deal with makes him third.
Yeah, the scope is really big, but how long it takes puts him last chronologically that it really happens. I mean, basically, there are smaller milestones that happen for him.
Yes.
But, you know, he's also the famed legendary Messiah, a world breaker. So
exactly. Yeah.
we get the scene where Perrin does finally toss his axe because he gets he meets up with Elias later on. No, before the Trolloc attacks, I think he meets up with Elias. Correct. And Perrin is talking about tossing away the half moon axe he's been carrying since he left Two Rivers or Mansfield. Same thing. I mean, not the same thing, but same area. And Elias is like, no, keep it. But once you find yourself loving it, get rid of it. And then a little while later, there is another blacksmith, Dermot Ajala, in Tyr that he goes and helps to think. Like, he's just thinking while he's forging, but he helps that blacksmith, and the blacksmith lets him keep the hammer from the forge as a thank you for his work.
Yeah, that's before he goes to the Two Rivers
with
Fael, and he keeps on having this crisis of...
Am I the hammer or the axe?
He goes, the axe is definitely more effective. It is. It's definitely more of a killing implement.
But have you seen these guns?
Two Trollocs with this axe, but how much do I actually like using this axe? I may choose to do the hammer and things like that. And it's a very interesting, again, I never really like the will they or won't they, and Perrin is a lot of a will they or won't they throughout the whole story, which I think works. I really do. But at the same time, like, annoys the shit out of me because I'm like, just get rid of the axe then. Jesus Christ, yeah. Just pick up the hammer and go fucking murder some Trollocs with a hammer. Like, that's an actual legitimate battle weapon that has been used for years. Just fucking use the hammer if you're going to be a little bitch about it.
Yeah, so it's not until...
And he finally does.
Yeah, much later on. So he chops off the hand of a captive Shido Aiel. And... that's when he kind of becomes horrified at how easily he can commit violence with it. And so that's when he tosses the axe.
And then we get the weapon ever.
Yeah. Well, then Hopper comes in and is like, you know, the hammer is just as deadly as the axe, and you're fond of both. And Perrin finally comes to this epiphany, realization that the axe can only be used for destruction, but the hammer can be used for creation as well. And that is
sanctimoniously incorrect, but I get what he's saying.
Yeah. But that's whenever he takes and begins forging out his frustrations, both figuratively and literally. And the Ashaman... like, it brought Ashaman. I don't think if he was full Ashaman, or was he dedicated at the time, Neil?
Dedicated at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, oh no, with the rank of soldier, unless he got promoted. Oh, I mean,
by the end, he's a full Ashaman, but I thought he was, he only got upgraded once. And part of it was actually because he helped Perrin in some ways. But it doesn't really matter.
It's relatively unimportant. But they all just, like, while Perrin is, like, forging away on this, he's like, I feel, he just starts channeling. And he's like, it just felt like the right thing to do. And that's how we learn that Nialad has the talent for helping forge power rot weapons. So with Perrin at the forge, Nialad helping and the wise ones helping, like, keeping the material hot and everything as well.
Yeah.
He forges Mjolnir.
Forging it in, like, ridiculously small time, because not only is he anything that is this big of a work, because Mjolnir actually ends up being this kind of epic weapon, and not just because it's power rot, it's kind of just an epic weapon in and of itself. The wise ones are helping a lot, and that was what he expected. He was like, cool, I'm going to forge this hammer in like a third or a quarter of the time that it would normally take to build this. If you guys help me using the power, but I'm talking about using the power by making the fire hot and like cooling it down quickly and things like that. And Nail just goes, yeah, no, I'm down with that. Also, I'm just feeling the spirit move in me and I'm going to do a little more extra channeling. And Perrin's like, cool. This is an even cooler hammer because you did that. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah. So Perrin then leaves the regular, I think it's even like pretty damaged at this point, the regular blacksmith hammer. And he leaves it behind there in the forge. And he kind of comes to the realization that he's now wielding the hammer of a king, essentially, that he has now accomplished the prophecy that we see in the Shadow Rising that says, when the Wolf King carries the hammer, thus are the final days known. And he's like, yep, it's time for some last battle shit. From there,
wolves to me.
Yeah. From there, Perrin moves back to Rand to fulfill the second part of a prophecy, basically where he was foretold for him that he had to be there for Rand twice, or Rand would die. The first was saving Rand at Dumai's Wells. And the second is at Tarmogoyen, because while Rand is fighting at the board, now that is the second time, because it's there, yeah, because it's there that Lanfear is about to kill Rand at the board, and Perrin is just like, nope, and just picks her up and full on Loki's her.
You're right.
And just snaps her neck.
I like to think that he's also there for Rand a third time, and that it's just not in the prophecies, because as you've stated multiple times, and I've actually gone back and read a couple of times because I think it's so cool, is that when Rand is having his crisis of faith and crisis of light, if you will, on the mountaintop of Dragonmount, Perrin is not there sitting next to him. But he's there in spirit, if you can really call it that. And I feel very strongly that Rand knows that. I mean, he doesn't know that, but he does. And I think that that is one of the reasons that Rand Bodhisattvas instead of Darth fucking Rands everything and just ends it all.
It's just sitting there like, I could destroy the world now.
Right?
But I won't. Thanks, Perrin. You're a pal. Also,
thank you very much, because I think of fucking Ragnarok, the television show, every goddamn time I talk about Perrin. And somebody in our live recording Discord just posted a GIF from Ragnarok, and I was like, yes. Anyway, but yeah, no. He does fulfill both prophecies that he needs to be there for Rand. Also, we are well aware. I'm going to say this nicely. I think that neither of the two people who are talking about this character right now love this character. I think we think that he's good and that he's necessary and that he's important.
I like
Perrin. But I think neither of you do? Okay.
I like Perrin, but he's not a character I resonate with. I mean...
Sure. No, I think that's important.
It's so just not like... His life experience as written in the books isn't something I resonate with.
Yes. Same.
I mean, I still have all of my family. I've been very fortunate. I've had family die, obviously.
Sure.
But, yeah. You know, they weren't murdered by a religious zealous cult, you know, who framed mythical beast for it, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, so that's what, and we've talked about this a couple of times. That's one of the beautiful things about the Wheel of Time is that with over 2,600 named characters, there is a character that everyone can resonate with, or parts of multiple characters that you can resonate with.
Yes.
And I think we both mentioned it. Perrin's not it. And Matt's not it for me. But Rand is.
Yes.
You know, well, because so I too know what it feels like to be the savior of the world. That's it. No, not at all.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we know that you're the savior of the world, Andrew. You play coy all you want.
Well, that's fine, because I'm about to play Avatar, and just when the world needed him most, vanished. I'm going to go freeze myself in the Arctic to be discovered in 100 years by natives to the cold region.
All right, Captain America, how about you calm down?
Oh, well, at least then I took down Hydra, right?
Right? Right? No, but I do want to mention, again, this is a character that doesn't necessarily resonate hugely with Andrew or I. And that is not to say that if he resonates with you, that that's a bad thing or a dumb thing. That's amazing. That's why this character exists. That's why this book series exists. But we are glossing over a lot of shit that happens to Perrin and or Perrin does, including, again, I'm just going to go through like a...
There's a good bit of it that we can cover when we do the relationship episode between Perrin and Fayo.
Yeah, we're also going to do that. But I'm going to rapid fire like a few things that he does just so that we mention them here without actually going into them. Because Perrin goes ahead and... sorry, as I blank on things. Great.
I'm going to rapid fire through.
Perrin does some shit where he runs through Teleran Riad and helps beat Belal in Tyr. He goes ahead and runs around with Massima for a little while and doesn't really like the guy, but he uses him to go ahead and save Fael from the Shido Aiel. And then fucking Fael murders Massima because Perrin's not a man enough to do it. He convinces a bunch of wise ones to go ahead and follow him as he goes ahead and deals with the Aiel. He ends up with a bunch of Two Rivers men in tow because they're just like, cool, yeah, we follow Perrin Goldeneyes. He's the fucking dopest. He convinces Elaine to go ahead and basically let him set up Manetherin again in her domain as long as he promises to go ahead and also still be part of Andor and basically listen to her. Like, there are a bunch of fucking things that Perrin does that are kind of epic that we're glossing over. And we know that, and we recognize that. So if those are some things that you think are super awesome and important, please tell us. And we can do episodes on them. And as stated, we will definitely talk more about Fael Gate in Fael's chapters. We will definitely talk more about certain things that happen in their relationship chapter and in her chapter and things like that. But right now we are definitely intentionally, though not like dickishly so, trying to get through Perrin kind of quickly because we don't want to make this a 4-episode series just talking about Perrin's history. We know that he does extra stuff. We're there. We're with it. Last battle, Perrin. Let's do it.
So, like I've already mentioned, he kills Lanfear, who at the time is it Sindine? Because this this is reborn Lanfear after the Redstone Doorway.
Correct.
But perhaps one of the coolest things he does, completely unintentionally, which seems to be a bit of a metric for Perrin doing really cool things unintentionally, is in Teleron Riad just fucking backhanding Balefire away, and Egwene is like,
How did you do that?
That was Balefire. And he's like, it's just a weave, bruh. And she goes, it's just a weave. It's just a weave. And subsequently, not only defeats Tyene, but does it with a freshly discovered, never-before-seen weave, the Flame of Tar-Valon.
Yep.
Well, that is coined by the books and kind of heard the Flame of Tar-Valon.
Yes.
Sindine, that's right. Sindine was Lanfear's name.
Who is Moradin's bitch at that point.
Because just like
Moghedien. She and Moghedien are both fucking... necklaces
on Corsubras.
Corsubras.
Their souls are bound
in Corsubras. They're necklaces on his goddamn, like,
do you think the Corsubras ever brushed against each other and, like, they felt each other? They were like, oh.
Oh, I bet.
That's weird.
I can almost guarantee. In fact, I can guarantee that Moradin was just like, I wonder, and just, like, rubbed them up against each other just to fuck with Lanfear and Moghedien.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely something he would do.
Oh, yeah. But he also does a very important thing, which is funny in some ways.
Oh, then there's the dream spike thing.
That is true. That was what I was going to talk about. So while the last battle is happening, Perrin is involved because, again, he does take out Lanfear, Sindane at the time. And he does do a couple of other things where he's involved in the battle. But Perrin's arc for the last battle is mostly set up with a parallel fight that is happening outside of the world in Teleran Riad. Because there is another person, nicknamed Slayer, who we also know as Lord Luke, and a few other names. They have set up this basically like rivalry because Slayer is very good in Teleran Riad. He is using Telerandriad as a tool. He is using it as an environment. He is taking out wolves. He is taking out people. He is making it very, very difficult to go ahead and track him, because a lot of what he's doing is in the world of dreams. Well, enter our boy Perrin, who goes, I have no reason to actually know the world of dreams this well, but I do, because fuck you, that's why. And he goes into Telerandriad and he basically duels Slayer in some ways, because other than Egwene, who is actually doing a lot of stuff in the real world and doesn't really have that much time to deal with Telerandriad, Perrin is basically fighting Slayer alone in the world of dreams with some wolf help, but other than that, pretty much not. And he goes in and he gets his butt handed to him really hard the first time. And he comes out of Telerandriad and he goes, well, yes.
But the third time. He comes out of
Telerandriad and goes, I fucked up. Heal me and let me get back in there. And then he goes in, and as Andrew has stated, he loses a lot. He loses
because he loses the first time in Two Rivers to Slayer. Yep. And then where he really, really loses is the first time he loses to Slayer during Ptarmigan.
Yep.
And that's when he comes back, gets healed, goes back in, and apparently is just like a Super Saiyan and gets stronger every time he almost dies. Because then he Fetty whops the shit out of Slayer. Goes full Thanos on Lanfear and then just bitch smacks Balefire away and is just like, Lord Perrin Golden Eyes, motherfucker. It's just a weep.
Do you know who I am? I am Lord Perrin.
Leader of the Two Rivers Bowman.
No, but honestly, it's definitely a situation where without Perrin, you do not have a victory in the last battle, which is true for almost every character, because the forces of the light are actually incredibly reliant on each other. But at the same time, it's also true that Perrin has a very specific set of skills that he cultivated through a long career of 2 years of being a wolf rider. And if you stop killing people in Telerandriad now, that'll be the end of it. But if you keep killing wolves in Telerandriad, he will find you and he will kill you.
Yeah. So let's go over the powers of a wolf brother or wolf sister.
Let's do it.
So psychic communication with more than one wolf or wolf brother over large distances. Anytime I say wolf brother, I'm like, go ahead and superimpose wolf sister, wolf, whatever on it. Because Robert Jordan has confirmed it's not
them. Yeah, exactly.
He's confirmed it's not gender locked.
The books.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it can't exist. It just isn't what we see in the books.
Yeah. He gets a psychic location. He can tell how far away he is from wolves and other wolf persons. He gets better vision. This includes both being able to see farther in normal conditions and being able to see in the dark. Which is funny when he realizes dark he can vision. Do that. And everybody else is like, where the fuck are we going? And he's like, what do you mean? It's still daylight. Oh, no.
Oh, fuck.
He gets a heavily augmented sense of smell to the point where he can smell. It causes
problems.
Yeah. Basically, like scientifically speaking, what he's able to do with Vael is he's not smelling fear. He's smelling the pheromones that are released whenever somebody feels scared. Fear or anger or whatever. And he's picking up on that. And is that wolf part of his mind is like, I know what this smell means. And we all know that anger always smells like ozone. So it's like, what smells like a scorched earth policy? Oh.
Oh.
My wife is here. Oh, shit. And Beryline's in my room. And she's always half naked. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
He has wolf brothers and sisters and all have an innate connection with Telerandriad. They're able to enter the dream world in their sleep and in the flesh. which entering in the Force generally requires channeling.
Extremely dangerous.
Oh, yeah. And then prophetic dreams. Distinct from the dreamwalking ability, also has abilities similar to a dreamer that he can kind of predict the future. It's not clear whether it's strongly connected to the Wolf Brother ability or something which all Wolf Brothers and possibly Wolves possess, or something more unique to Perrin.
Sure.
But we're,
it's kind of a... Because he is a very special recipe of Taviran, Wolf Brother, you know, a lot of different
things. Minotaurian.
Right? It's hard to say exactly what everyone who's a Wolf Brother or Wolf Sister can do, but it is strongly suggested.
Yeah. And he does have a fair number of wolf dreams. So like he has one in Towers of Midnight where he sees Matt fighting against himself, a dozen different men wearing his face, all dressed in different types of clothing. Matt spun his spear and never saw the shadowy figure creeping up behind him bearing a bloody knife.
Yep.
And then he also sees a sheep suddenly running in a flock towards the woods. Wolves chased them, and a terrible beast wailed in the woods unseen. He was there in that dream, he sensed, but who he was chasing and why, something looked wrong with the wolves. Yep. And then another one, Fael, Grady, Elias, and Gaul all walking towards a cliff, followed by thousands of others. Of course, the last two were interrupted by his as his men in white cloaks were running into the trap set by Grendel and Slayer.
Yep.
So all of that happens. Men have some viewings over him. There's some parallels between Perrin and Perun, Velis, Thor, and Zeus.
Oh, yeah.
Most obvious would be Thor, Ma'alanir, Mjolnir, that kind of thing. Except 100%. Ma'alanir burns with an insane heat that it imparts on those that it hits. Whereas Mjolnir is kind of more... Well, not kind of, it's more thunderbolts and lightning. Very, very frightening.
Galileo. Figaro.
Magnifico?
I love it.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But yeah, so that is the nuts and bolts of Perrin. As stated, we will definitely get more into all of the inner workings of him, the inner workings of his relationship, the workings of his boo, all of that different stuff later. But that is, as stated, the nuts and bolts of Perrin. That is sort of what he does. That's sort of who he's based on, things like that. Last thoughts, Andrew, what do you think about Perrin, and what is it that you think is sort of the most important things to say about Perrin before we go?
Perrin pushes the bounds of being a support character. He does so much to where he's just outside the normal bounds of being a support character, but not so much to where he's not in some ways a support character. A lot of what happens with Perrin and what Perrin does happens to help bolster and support and be there for Rand and Matt. And we know that from very early on that all three have to kind of be together, be there to support each other. But I think the most compelling part of Perrin's story is his journey from the gentle giant to the, you know, sometimes I have to use violence, to the, oh shit, I kind of find violence very easy now. And finding a way to kind of balance the two. So much in line with the core theme of the Wheel of Time, Perrin finds his own internal balance. Spends most of his time trying to honestly balance things. I mean, trying to balance, you know, his wolf abilities with like just interacting with people, trying to balance his relationship with his girlfriend and then wife, with all of his other responsibilities. Because, it's kind of hard. It's not as obvious early on, even though we get to see inside of his head, so it's easier for us to see, and it'd be interesting to see how the TV show does it. But Perrin is, like, more than deeply in love with Fael for whatever reason. So, it's very interesting. Sure. He comes out with one of the coolest weapons. And I really like the idea that, you know, there's the chance that Perrin becomes what is ultimately known as the mythos of Thor.
Yep. I like that.
What about you? What are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I've always had a little bit of
not on life.
Yes, indeed. I've always had a little bit of a problem with Perrin because I don't like the trope of the gentle giant, because oftentimes I feel like authors use it as a crutch in some ways, where they just say, oh, I'm so big and I don't want to make the wrong decision, so I very carefully weigh all of my options. And most of the time I just see that in the stories that get written, because that is a legitimate like human trait. But in a lot of the stories that are written, it just comes out as I'm indecisive and I've justified why I'm indecisive. And I feel like at the beginning, Perrin is 100% that way. He walks around just being like, no, 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 no. I need to think about this more. And you're like, cool. Well, people are dying, so maybe stop thinking and start doing. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about Perrin is that later on, he stops thinking and starts doing, which is not to say that he doesn't still put thought into his actions. He does grow, he does mature, he does make decisions faster, but it's still thoughtful decisions. And so I do end up by the end of the books being in Perrin's camp, even if I'm still like, I don't love the character. I'm definitely still a Perrin fan, even though, as you've stated already, and I think that's a really good way of putting it, I think Perrin is a very important character. I don't connect with Perrin that much. Because while I do very much, you know, as I'm sure that you do as well, Andrew, try to think very much about the things that I do. And I'm not just a person who impulsively jumps immediately into whatever is going on. There is a time for thought and there is a time for action. And those aren't mutually exclusive. But if you never act on anything, you never do anything. And at the beginning, I feel like Perrin is that. He just sits there and overthinks everything, and he never does. But by the end, he gets to the point of being, I will think about this still, but I'm going to do something about it. Yeah. And I think by the end, I'm definitely far more of a Perrin fan. And of course, he is given some really intense stuff to deal with in A Memory of Light, and, you know, the couple of books before that as well, but mostly A Memory of Light. And so I definitely think that he's a solid addition to the story. He's a solid addition to the team, even though I'm just sitting there being like, fucking, do we really need this guy?
Yeah, I mean, Perrin has to learn the hard way something that that at least I was taught in the military, that a poor plan poorly executed is still always better than no plan never executed. And basically the inaction, indecisiveness is that's what gets people killed. Doing the wrong thing is, or like not doing the best thing in the situation. I don't want to say doing the wrong thing because it carries a connotation that you intentionally do something bad, but doing something is better than doing nothing. And a combat scenario, which is a situation that Perrin finds himself in a lot.
Yeah,
but we'll talk more about that Friday.
A good plan, well executed. Then there's a bad plan, mildly executed. And then there's no plan, not executed. And then there's a bad plan, very well executed, that's at the bottom. Which we see by all of the great captains being compulsed, which we've talked about before. Yeah.
All right, so I'm announcing this at the end of this episode, because by the time this episode goes live, this stream will have already been done. But for those of you that are listening live, the sneeze wasn't the point of that.
Indeed.
For those of you listening live this Friday, November 5th, we will be starting the first stream in what I hope is a series of streams called Vets Discuss. Took me far too long to realize it sounded similar to Let's Discuss. That, I mean, that was definitely the plan of why it's called Vets
Discuss. Yeah, 100%.
Myself and a few other veterans, to hopefully include Josh. Right now, it just kind of depends on availability. I want to start a thing of veterans of any military service, of any military branch. So it doesn't matter what country or what branch, if you served in the military, we'll probably include the Coast Guard in that. You know,
unfortunately,
I'm just kidding. You can't say that. I can't.
I'm not allowed to say that. I know. I'm
sorry. I'll give you a pass. You get a pass this time.
All right. I won't do it.
Coasties, take no offense. You know what we mean. But I want to start some live streams that happen at least once a month, where we get some military veterans together and we talk about the Wheel of Time. We talk about things that happen in the Wheel of Time. This Friday, we're going to kind of get together, and those of us that are on the stream, we're going to talk about our military experience. We're going to talk about what Vets Discuss is kind of geared to be and kind of how it's going to go to some extent. And we're also going to talk about Robert Jordan's military experience with his service. So if you're able, this Friday, November 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, tune into our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Black Tower Podcast. I don't have the live stream built yet, but it will be built by the end of the day tomorrow, because luckily I have tomorrow off from running Adventures League D&D. So,
nice.
But that's happening. If you can make it out there, we'd love to see you there. All that fun stuff. I'm going to try to make some fun stuff for it and see how much I can do with that. But in regular show news, this has been our very much condensed episode on Perrin. Like Daniel mentioned earlier, there are a ton of other things that Perrin does and is involved with that are very much important, that we very much respect from the series. But we were kind of on a bit of a time crunch here for this episode. So any of the moments about Perrin that we didn't talk about, make sure that you let us know in the comment section down below on YouTube or in comments on wherever you listen to us here on the podcast. I try to look at the different sections. Namely, Podbean is the easiest one to look at for comments, but leave them down below. Let us know what things we may have missed that we should have talked over a bit more. And we, you know, there will definitely be time in the future for us to revisit an episode on Perrin. Probably at least after season one has completed, we can talk about Perrin from the books versus Perrin in the show and where we think that's going to go. But stay tuned for that kind of stuff in the future. And again, let us know. And you can also let us know on Discord, on Twitter, whatever the case is. So with that being said, going to go ahead and end this episode here. Josh sends his love and appreciation for you tuning in and listening. And he looks forward to being back with us, hopefully next episode. I don't know exactly how long he's on vacation.
Well, he said that he should be here next week on location. And so he will still not be home, but he will be here. Now, again, hard to guarantee because I don't know what could happen in his life or in his vacation that would stop that. But presumably, as of now, Josh should be here next week.
Oh, other announcement. Another live stream. November 20th. At, think 8 or 9
o'clock.
It might be earlier than that. 20 November. Yeah. So the Saturday after the Wheel of Time TV show premieres, So we will all actually be together for the premiere and we will be taking on the 20th and we will be doing the first fantasy draft live stream where we go over the results of our fantasy draft for season one. So
Well, for the first three episodes of season one.
Yeah, sorry. No, we're just going to go ahead and calculate it.
I'm hella excited because definitely tune in. It's going to be a really fun episode because one of the things that we're going to do after the show has come out is Smack put this all together and he's done a great job, but he also only included actors and characters that we knew already. And so once the first three episodes come out, that pool of characters is going to be way bigger. And so I'm actually looking forward to all of us going ahead and deciding, you know, how much of our teams we want to keep and how much of our teams we want to bench and who to pick up and who to drop and things like that. So it's actually going to be a really exciting live stream. Be there on the 20th. We're going to have a lot of fun. And Smack's a great dude. So definitely want to show him support for going in and putting this together for us. So be there.
Yeah. So, but for all that being said, thank you again for tuning in to this episode of the Black Tower Podcast. I have been your Bijan Mahale Andrew.
Our Sorbonne Mahale Josh has been here in the spirit. He is currently flying at the moment and possibly listening in, depending on his internet connection. And I have been your Amenkan Mahale Daniel. And from everybody here at the Black Tower Podcast, thank you so much for being here, for listening to us about Perrin, about life, about the Wheel of Time, everything we always end up getting to in the Black Tower. And in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening.
Trouble just fitting.